Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquez and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Number one internet sports talk show in the world. We are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I tell you what, we want to real quickly want to welcome our brand new affiliate, Indiana Talks. We welcome them on board. Also, you can find us on TuneIn and iTunes Radio, and you can also find Indiana Talks there. So great spot to go. If you like everything from politics to sports, Indiana Talks is the place to go. IndianaTalks.com. Go check them out. We're so glad to be a part of their audience. Most importantly, we're glad that Indiana Talks audience is a part of our audience. Today, our first official simulcast of the broadcast. We're going to be broadcasted live on the Balance Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, and Indiana Talks, and throughout the various different affiliates as well, Live 360, iTunes Radio, and so forth. So glad that you guys could join us. It is Easter weekend. That's right. Time to sit back and just relax, spend some time with family, go to church, understand the real meaning of Easter, and so forth. Well, we're live here in Indianapolis, Indiana, one of the homes of the Sweet 16, and we're going to break down March Madness. Lots of bracket busters going on, that's for sure. And I tell you what, who would have ever saw this coming this month in March? And, well, that's why they call it March Madness. So in the second hour, we're going to break that down. Coming up here, right here, in just a few moments, Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk going to join us. We're going to be talking about last week's IndyCar race out in St. Petersburg. Hinchtown gets his first win. We're also going to be doing some recapping from Fontana. Obviously, both NASCAR and IndyCar are off today, this weekend, because of Easter. And then we're going to get caught up on NHRA and some of the local action and your local tracks around the state of Indiana. So, guys, we welcome you. And you know what? We always like to take time also to make sure that we thank all of our sponsors and everybody that's on board with us as well. And one of our new sponsors is IndianMade.com. I want you guys to go check them out. Not every day, but they update a lot of stuff of what's going on in the month of Indy, not only how it pertains to the Indianapolis 500, but really just how it pertains to the city and how we get geared up for the Indianapolis 500 as well. And they do exclusively covering for IndyCar. So maybe NASCAR is not your thing, but IndyCar is. And we're teaming up with them in the month of May down at IMS at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and we're going to be doing some interviews, and we're going to be doing some stuff for our show, and you'll be able to hear all of those interviews and stuff right here on our show and on Indiana Talks as well, our different affiliates, WXRB in Brownsburg as well. So you'll be able to hear all of that. Some of the things to check out on IndianMade.com this week, they talked a little bit about the Brickyard Crossing restaurant opened up. They've got an Easter brunch tomorrow. Today, guys, though, is the third annual IMS Kids Club Easter Egg Hunt, and that'll take place this Saturday. You could go to IndianMade.com to register. It is free, but I think they do want you to register. And have you heard about this new movie called Turbo? I think this is pretty cool. It's an animated movie about a snail's dream to win the Indianapolis 500. So go there to IndianMade.com. Check out that trailer. Kind of a very neat little thing that they've got going on there. Well, guys, like I said, we've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to jump right into that here in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to be back with I do this every week, either Kenny Barr or Cliff Tanner, but we're going to be back with Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk We're going to be talking racing. Everything goes fast. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Fastlane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley, Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fastlane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
I want to go fast. All right, my minions, welcome back to the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. It is time, that time that we do every week. We jump into racing. We talk about everything that goes fast, from IndyCar to NASCAR, NHRA, and your local short track action. We're going to try to get it all in. It's good to be back in the studio here the last few weeks. It seems like we've been gone, and we've been having to tape our segments with Kenny and Cliff and just various different things, and we've had a lot going on. So it's good to be back here in the Ballast Studio in the heart of Indianapolis, just a few miles away from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Well, it is the big city, the Sweet 16, a lot going on here in Indianapolis, and we'll get to that here in just a moment. But Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk joining us. How we doing, sir? I hear that your brackets are officially busted.
I'm not even telling anybody I had any brackets. The only thing I got going for me now is I bet the guy who I work for, who's 83 years old, a buck, that my brackets are going to be better than his brackets. Otherwise, I'm pretty well sunk.
Now, see, Kenny, I thought you would have went away from the monetario issues and maybe bet a root beer or a diet Mountain Dew or something. That's your typical bet.
Well, yeah, that's true. I try to save for monetary, but we used to have a guy, nothing to do with racing at all, but we used to have a guy in the office that he and I argued like, oh, man, two redheaded stepbrothers over Indiana-Purdue games in point spreads. Well, he passed away, and our bet was always a dollar. So we've kind of kept this tradition going in honor of our ex-office manager. It's just kind of a way to remember him and stuff. And besides, it makes great fodder, and it's not every day you can run up and talk to your boss and call him a cheapo and yell at him and scream at him all for a buck. It's kind of fun.
Well, I was wondering, I got caught up in that text dialogue between everybody, and I kind of was like, I walked away. I'll tell you one thing with you guys, if you walk away from the text for 1 minute, you've missed a whole hour's worth of conversation. So I was wondering what that was all about. I was just kind of right along with the storm, guys. Well, I tell you what, we want to get right into this, Kenny. Last week in St. Petersburg, IndyCar, James Hinchcliffe was able to do something. My man Hinch, Hinchtown, mayor of Hinchtown, was able to do something in the GoDaddy IndyCar that one certain person, Danica Patrick, was not able to do in IndyCar.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
So, let's talk about that race out there in St. Petersburg. Hinchcliffe puts the next generation of IndyCars on the map. And if you were listening last Saturday, guys, right here on The Balance, myself and Cliff Tanner talked about some of the outbreak drivers to look for this year in IndyCar and what we came up, and one of the names, obviously very common, and I like very well and know him well and have had many opportunities to talk with him and keep in touch with him on a personal level, is my man, Mr. Hinchcliffe, mayor of Hinchtown. Kenny, talk with us a little bit about some of the things you saw in that race, and I certainly want to talk with you about some things on that race, but Hinchcliffe gets his first win in the GoDaddy car or as an IndyCar driver, period.
Well, I watched a good chunk of that race, and the thing that surprised me more than anything was the tire strategy. And, you know, the reds are supposed to be soft compound and fall off quick, and the blacks are supposed to be better for your longer runs and just hang in there a lot longer. Well, he stayed on reds, and they didn't fall off all that much. So I've been doing a little bit of legwork and research, and I'm beginning to wonder if those tires are all that much different than each other, because he honestly didn't think he was going to win that race because of the tire choice. Didn't have a chance to pit the way the race fell again, and didn't want to for track position because, of course, you know, on them road courses, it's not like you can pass 12 people at Talladega on one lap. I mean, you got to, if you're in front or the first two or three, you got to stay there. So they elected to stay out on the reds, and they did very, very well for him. So interesting about the tire strategy. I'm really happy for him because I've never met him. I hope to do that this year in Indianapolis with you sometime. And he seems like a great guy. He's a super representative for the IndyCar IZOD series and GoDaddy. Good driver. Seems to have his head on straight. He's from Canada, so he's from the right side of the world here. Always root, if it's not an American, I like this hemisphere, you know, before we go to Europe and France and stuff. But we very impressive win. Stayed toward the front all day, took advantage of a couple of mistakes and crisis people made, and come home at the top of the podium.
Well, it's got, and we'll get into this conversation in a minute, but it's got to make you feel good that we have a Japanese driver driving IndyCar in the United States, right?
Yeah, that makes me feel real good. You know what's even worse? Isn't he driving for AJ?
I think so. I got him in my notes here. I just haven't quite got that far. We are going to talk about him. You are right about that, though. Well, like I said, I couldn't be happier for my man Hinch from a personal standpoint, from a fan standpoint, and just for the race itself. Marco improves his street skills as well. Simona was pretty impressive. Dixon on the move from the back. I mean, it was kind of a crazy race, wasn't it, Kenny? Don't forget good runs by Castroneves and TK and Justin and Tagliani. And, you know, they were all in the mix, just to name a few others. I think it was a very entertaining race. I think something that didn't get mentioned as much as should have is the improved presentation of teams. I think last year they were feeling their way through the weekend there at St. Petersburg, and I think this year they were clearly ready for the race this year. Thoughts?
Well, they were, and all of them had a little bit more aggressive posture, and I think they knew they had to. Plus, the second visit with that car, and although a lot of people don't think that downforce handling is not that important at a road course, it very much is. Boy, if you get that off balance just a little bit, and you get three corners you can't get around, you're going to go to the back in a great big hurry. So the engineering and the downforce is real, real important on road courses. Not quite as important as it is the big show down there where you're probably looking out the window and seeing the scoring tower, but it's really, really important. And after they've run several road courses and then they've got the St. Pete thing down a little bit, they can take a little more aggressive posture with it. The drivers know what kind of feel they want. They've been on these tires now enough where they know what to expect when they change tires, as long as they're on their toes and remember that we just went from black to red and we can do this and we can do that, maybe change a little bit here and there on that quick 5 or 6 second pit stop they make. I'm not surprised that the team showed a little bit more aggressive posture. I'll tell you, the gal I'm going to watch is the gal from Brazil, Simone. I'm going to butcher this. How do you pronounce that, Tom?
Dicelva Elver? Well, we always have problems with that. We just call her Simone, that girl from Brazil.
Yeah, the girl from Brazil. She, if I remember correctly, last year really gave him the devil early in the year on the road courses. and then started to fall off, and I don't know. And I think it started about Indy when things started going south for her. I predict she's going to end up in the top five or six in points if it's by the time the season's over with. If she keeps this aggressive posture, don't run out of money, and does a good job. You're right, Marco Andretti had a nice race. Helio was up and down a little bit. He ended up good. Tony Kanaan, I pull for him, although, you know, he's not an American, but Tony is just a great, great guy. I've seen him do a lot of off-track stuff that really impresses me. And really, you know, we love racing as much as we love just about anything on earth, including eating breakfast and dying Mountain Dew. But real life is, you know, people and taking
sure.
care of each other and stuff. And Tony always steps up to the plate anytime something needs to be done. So he instantly became a big fan of mine a couple of years ago and some of the things I saw him do. So it's an interesting race. Justin Wilson, I'm glad he's got a ride that seems to be a solid ride this year. And IndyCar's slowly catching my attention a little bit more than it used to in the past.
Well, that's a good thing. I tell you what, I like IndyCar. I think what we have found, as far as fans go, you've got your IndyCar base, your NASCAR base, your NHRA base, your short track base, and everybody knows short track doesn't mix anywhere around IndyCar, NASCAR, or the real short track fans, I should say. One of the things also I wanted to talk with you about, and we saw this happen. I watched this, I kind of scratched my head and did one of those puppy dog head cocks, when I saw Hillebrand in that caution accident, would you say that Hillebrand's accident shows that the rear bumpers do not keep cars from being launched into the air during rear-end impacts? And will IndyCar, you think, be making any changes to prevent this? I think a lot of that, though, did come, freely admitted by J.R. Hillebrand. He just wasn't paying attention. He had a lot of things going on at the same time. He was on a caution, and he misjudged his distance. But the question still remains, when you have that rear-end impact, will any car be making any changes to prevent, you know, a car being launched? Fortunately, they were going slow, so that wasn't a major issue. But you look at the possibilities of what could have happened if that was a different scenario or speeds were a little bit higher.
Well, it certainly will make the IndyCar representatives at least raise an eyebrow and go, ooh, that is a potential ugly. I think the first thing they're going to do is they're going to go take Hillebrand and give him a double head slap like they used to do in the NFL, you know. So pay attention to what's going on, son, because that was kind of dumb, especially whoever – I forget who he hit, but it was kind of goofy.
Maybe, you know, I don't know, something has to be done about bonehead moves like J.R. Hillebrand pulled over on power. Maybe he was texting. I don't know. Maybe he was trying to – out of, I don't know. But I don't know. No penalty is going to fix the damage and havoc that's caused by that. And I think you've got these guys. And, you know, J.R. Hillebrand's no rookie. He knows what he's doing. And it was kind of a bonehead mistake. We can break that down. But it's just one of those things that happened. I was wanting to get your thoughts on that. You know, these guys are supposed to be the best drivers in the world. And we get idiotic moves like that under the yellow flag. It makes me wonder and scratch my head every time I see something like that. But, you know, as much as I sympathize with Power's plight, you just can't give him the points. How would you rate Power? Look at that racing. People make mistakes all the time, and Power has made them too. What are your thoughts on how Will Power handle that whole situation with J.R. Hillebrand?
Yeah, I knew you'd catch me on something I didn't pay attention to. I really don't know. But I do know that Will Power just seems like he's got a lot of hard luck following him around. I mean, every time he gets a championship in his grasp, something happens that's beyond his control. J.R. Hillebrand, that's why they call them accidents. You know, I'm sure he didn't mean to do that and didn't want to take anybody out. He certainly didn't benefit anything out of the whole deal and stuff. And sometimes I wonder if they got the drivers trying to do a little bit too much with the gauges and turning up the boost and checking to see how many overtaking opportunities. I love that phrase. Tom, that's called passing is what that is. They've got to dolly up that phrase a little bit for I don't know who for sure, because that's the kind of thing they talk about in F1 and across the pond. But, you know, they got to keep track of all that kind of stuff, and it's – they also use that to keep from getting passed at the same time. So that's just one more thing a driver and a crew chief has to pay attention to, and it gives you that little extra boost going down a straightaway in particular. And if you enter the corner too hot, then that just makes one more thing a driver's got to think about and talk about all the time. So it makes me wonder if the drivers aren't a little bit too busy, or they're asking them to do a little bit too much. You know, it's like texting and driving. You joke that he might have been texting Helio, but, you know, one more thing to distract you is not a good thing.
I totally agree. And here's a kind of off-the-wall question, and we'll move on to some NASCAR and some other talk here. But I don't know, maybe you don't have an answer for this. We're all in radio. I just like to scratch my head sometimes at the why things happen that they do. I'm wondering, could you tell me why NBC Sports has a radio spot on almost every commercial break on Sirius, XM, NASCAR, radio advertising? F1 has the ultimate lifestyle while no effort is being made to advertise IndyCar. Now, don't get me wrong. I think F1 is a great series. But IndyCars here in America, I mean, IndyCars here in the United States, they are even doing driver spot telling us that the background on F1 drivers, and that's during an IndyCar race. Is this just a sign, do you think, that NBC just sees IndyCar as a content filler and nothing more?
Either that or just having trouble selling an advertising spot. That's a great question. And that does make a person wonder a little bit why they would advertise for F1 on an IndyCar thing. Sometimes I watch these races on TV and I get absolutely bored to death running the same commercials over and over and over again. But then when you start talking about the content of the commercial, why would you advertise your competitor? Unless IndyCar's getting a little bit of money from Bernie Ecclestone and all those guys over there to do that, to try and generate a little bit more interest for that race down in Texas. It was pretty successful last year, so I don't know. At what level do you call it successful? You know, they packed the place. It was a real good weekend down there in Texas. So I don't know if F1's actually paying for the advertising. That's a good question. And I don't know that we'd ever get to the bottom of it, but it certainly is good lunch table conversation, that's for sure.
Right, absolutely. Here's the thing. I guess, you know, you nailed it on the head. It comes down to revenue. Someone in F1 spending money. I mean, that's really what it amounts to. And I think if you've ever gone to an F1 race or anything like that, you'll likely see why that's the case. They have a lot of money to spend, so they spend it.
Boy, do they.
So what are some of your other observations about – the race out there in St. Petersburg, what are some of the things that you think that went well, that didn't go so well? You look at the new DW12 IndyCar vehicle, if that's what you want to call it. I really don't want to call it a vehicle, call it a freaking race car. But what were your overall thoughts seeing those roll out and be in actual competition mode?
Well, I think it did a pretty good job all in all and stuff. I don't think anybody really had a big engineering advantage on anybody else, which helped keep the field close to each other and put some of this back in the driver's hands. As you probably remember, I'm not the biggest fan of road course racing because it's just too busy and too many things to do, plus you can't watch the whole thing and analyze it real well. You just got to watch bits, pieces, and chunks and parts and maybe hairpin turns that most of the activity happens on and stuff. But I think overall it was a nice – it was a good race, decent, competitive, a decent winner, a lot of drama, a lot of storylines. The cars seem to be fast. They will have to address that launching issue. And maybe Hildebrand did everybody a favor by doing that on a caution – and not at speed at some oval somewhere where they're going 200-plus mile an hour and causing a real ugly crash. So I think overall IndyCar and the IndyCar folks, whoever's running the show now, should be pretty well pleased. And they're off to California here in a couple of weeks. And that track isn't nearly as crazy and as busy as one down at St. Pete. So we'll get another good look at them. I mean, they got one hairpin, one really boxed off straight away, and then a dog leg that goes into a little bit of a twist. But other than that track is a whole different layout. We'll see how they run down at Long Beach out in California here I think it's what, the weekend of the 21st, if I remember right.
I think so. The next race is in Alabama, I believe, and then the next race is out there. So. Pardon me?
Oh, yeah, you're right. My bad. They're going to Alabama. And Alabama's a mess.
Alabama. Yeah, talk with me about that track real quick, and then I want to talk with you a little bit about Tecumseh Soto.
Alabama track is – I'm dizzy just looking at the layout of the thing. I mean, it's just – if you like to twist and turn, and if that's the kind of race you like, you absolutely love Alabama. Is that a regular permanent course or is that a road course, Tom?
The road course. I'm almost positive that I'll have to do some.
I'm in a street course.
Now, is in the street. I call it road course. Same thing. I know what you meant. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a street course. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh boy. Whoever dreamed this layout up must be drinking moonshine or something. This thing's crazy.
Probably not.
Gotta put a red light in the thing while they're at it. My God. But that's really going to test some drivers and test their skills and test their patience, test their entries. Test their braking abilities. IndyCar doesn't bring in road course ringers, but this would be one of those tracks that I probably would do that on if I was a guy who wasn't super comfortable with road courses. And it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't somebody jump out of a car because they got tired of road courses or got uncomfortable with them last year?
They did. Who was that? You see, now you're stumping me there, buddy.
I didn't mean to because I'm just trying to reach here and trying to stretch. But it does happen and stuff. And this is going to be a challenging course for everybody. You're right. That's April 7th.
Well, so, you know, that's been a favorite track of Team Penske, and obviously Will Powers won there the last couple of years, and Julio won there in 2010. So maybe this is a good week for Will Power. He seems to do well on that track. It is a road course out there in Birmingham, Alabama area, though. So, yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that track because it looks like we're not going to see much speed on that track. You've got two straightaways, it looks like, and you've got a couple of those hairpin turns you were talking about as well. All right, so Tomoko Soto. Spent a few days with AJ Foyt at a convention in Vegas last month, kind of a sort of a shake your hand and get to know each other. But he is part of AJ Foyt's team. So what are your thoughts? I don't know that you're just from my – if I'm wrong on this, I do apologize. But I don't know that you're a big Foyt racing fan. But we do have him representing an American company, and an American driving team has brought the Japanese to America instead of the other way around for a change. So now what are your thoughts on Tomoko Soto, certainly one of the IndyCar icons, going over to AJ Foyt Racing?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge AJ Foyt Racing fan.
Oh, my fault. He's
one of the top two or three drivers that ever jumped in a seat. I've always liked AJ a bunch, even though he's a tough, cantankerous at times, tough guy to drive for and stuff. I've always thought that AJ is just absolutely amazing. I mean, he's the only guy there's some things he's done, and I was just reading about this a little bit last night, that nobody else has done in a race car. Won some things. I bet you if he hadn't broken his legs, 10 or 15 years ago, he'd still be trying to crawl in that car now and then just to make her go. I can remember when he jumped in that car when everybody said he was washed up and put it, I think, in the middle of the front row at 220-something, and the crowd just went absolutely nuts. So AJ is one of my absolute favorite icons of racing. Now, why is he bringing in the Japanese guy? I really don't know, because I think anybody in the world would want to race for AJ Foyt, although – unfortunately, the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, that's really been a second-tier team in the IndyCar series. They haven't had a lot of success, and I don't know why, because I think the money's there. I think the engineering's there. You would think that a team like that, you know, you get a lot of bad breaks and stuff in racing. Everything's got to go just right to win an Indy 500 or win down in Alabama or win at San Paulo or wherever you happen to be racing at the time. But it seems that a lot of the teams, the Andretti Green Racing and the Penske Racing, seems to be at the top of the heap all the time, and then you can get down to 10th, 11th, and 12th, and you'll find the Panther Racings and the AJ Foyt Racing and stuff that's hanging out there almost every race when things are over with. So I don't know. I really don't know the why for, but racing for AJ Foyt would just absolutely be cool. And you're going to learn a ton from him. Even if it's just a pit stop and a one-off thing. Bringing in the Japanese guy, I'm kind of betting that the Japanese guy bought a ride, would be my guess here. Bring a lot of money, help him get through the month of May, because racing Indy is expensive, very expensive. Because you got to remember, you got to pay hotels and meals and pay the guys who are there. It used to be a full month, now I think it's only 3 weeks. They did that on purpose to try and cut down the cost of things. These motors are expensive, tires are expensive. If I remember right, it costs $250, $260 a lap down in Indy, and you're always wanting. You can't test enough, and you can never test enough to get that car tweaked quite as well as you want it to. So it wouldn't surprise me if Sato brought a big checkbook with him. Now, the other thing that I noticed about AJ Racing, did you see who might be driving his second car? Derek Daly's kid.
I did see that.
Connor Daly, and that's interesting and stuff. Now, he would bring Dad's experience, obviously. Dad will have to be in his ear a little bit and stuff. I would like to say that's another one of those little sidebar stories that I'm going to keep an eye on. I hope he lands that ride. I guess there's still a negotiation. But that would be very interesting, and I would pull for him as a dark horse. I don't even know if he's really up to – has he got his IndyCar license yet? I don't even know that for sure.
I'm not sure exactly. Well, we got to take a break, Mr. Kitty Barr. We'll be back, and we're going to be talking some NASCAR. Obviously, another father-son team to watch is Graham Rahal. And we know how well that Rahal Letterman team is, and we know that Graham, obviously, coming off a championship, is certainly a driver to watch as well. But we're going to be back, and we're going to be talking some NASCAR, some of the local action around Indiana, guys. This is The Balance on Saturday morning. Don't go away, my minions. The fun is just beginning.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. Do you have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
All right, welcome back to The Balance. Good morning. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I tell you what, our first hour is absolutely, truly the fastest hour on radio as we talk everything racing. Just broke down last week's race out in St. Petersburg with IndyCar. We're going to get into some NASCAR and some NHRA here in just a moment, as well as some talk around the local track action here in Indiana. Also, want to welcome again our brand new affiliate, Indiana Talks. So glad to be a part of your awesome broadcasting capabilities that you've brought to the balance and helping us grow as well. Indiana Talks, guys, indianatalks.com. If you like everything from sports to politics, really pretty much any type of talk radio you could think of, they've got something for you there on Indiana Talks. Check them out. Also on Twitter, at Indiana Talks. We're so glad to be a part of Indiana Talks. Also, guys, you can find us on iTunes Radio. Tune in as well through Indiana Talks. And, of course, here on the Balanced Radio Network and Blog Talk. So glad that you guys could take some time out of your Saturday morning to get caught up and get a full balance of sports, because that's what we do here. We actually give you the government recommended balanced diet in sports. Every day we do that. Every week, and especially if you've been following us in March Madness, we've been having some great March Madness shows. And we had one yesterday and Thursday with Gene Walker and $2 Bill Josh. We'll be joining us at the top of the hour. Well, guys, let's go over to the Stock Car Nation, NASCAR. Talk a little bit about NASCAR. Obviously, coming off that Fontana race out there. So, Kenny, what I want to do real quickly is any observations that you take away from that race and anything. Obviously, I think it was Tony Stewart get into a little bit of a squabble with Logano. Was it Logano that he got into it with? And I do apologize. It's been a crazy week with March Madness and everything. I fall behind the eight ball. That's why I rely on guys like Kenny and Cliff from Radio Speed Talk to actually make me look good. Kenny, what the race out there in Fontana in NASCAR, any takeaways from there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that race. That's the best race they've had. Well, Bristol's always good, but that's the best super speed race I have seen in a long time. Yeah, it was Joey Logano who was after, and we talk about that a lot on Radio Speed Talk this week, and I think we kind of boiled it down to Tony Stewart is completely out of line when he went eight on Logano after the race and then stopped him in pit road and tried to go take a punch at him. Somebody needed to remind Tony that he pulled the exact same stunt last year and stuffed 25 cars in a great big pileup, and nobody went to want to thump him in the head and stuff. Logano did exactly what any race car driver should do, racing for the win, and if he wouldn't do that, I'd fire his butt on the spot and find somebody who would. When the race is that close and you're that close to winning the thing, Tony's way out of line here. He just got blocked and went backwards to finish like 18th or 19th or 20th or some ridiculous thing. And he basically got himself waxed on the thing. So he's got no business getting all upset with Logano. Great TV fodder. Steve Burns did a great job following him, letting him speak his piece and then bailing out. We're really shocked and a little bit disappointed in NASCAR that Tony didn't get fined, because we've started a campaign at RadioSpeedTalk.com that any fines they have, we get 10% of. We volunteered to be the fine committee, Tom and Cliff and I. We decided that we're going to try and bring some consistency to that whole process. But Logano did nothing wrong. The crash that Hamlin ended up getting hurt on and getting the compound fracture in his L1 was unfortunate. Logano didn't do that on purpose. He just got into the corner too hot. The tires didn't stick. He pushed up or slid up, however you want to phrase it. And then these cars have this interesting habit of finding the little section of a racetrack that doesn't have a safer barrier. We were reminded of Mark Martin last year in Michigan, where he found a chunk of it and destroyed a car. And we hope Godspeed for Hamlin to get better. You know, we don't want anybody hurt. We want Toyotas to finish last, but we don't want anybody hurt in racing and stuff. But Stewart did absolutely the wrong thing. Went eight. I don't know if he's apologized yet. He probably should. Probably won't, because he's pretty headstrong. Terrific race car driver. I also saw where Roger Penske said, "I don't care. I still have an open seat for him down in Indy if he wants to come down and stuff." So I found that kind of interesting too. But that was a great race. I mean, the last 20 laps or so was just superior. Two guys going for the win. You almost wonder, because they were after each other last week and they were teammates last year and didn't get along real well, how that just happened to come to fruition. But great race. It was a shame that it ended the way it did, because I wanted to see those guys just actually race it out. Couldn't do it. Kyle Busch, give him kudos. Guy right on the spot. And the guy that finished second is the guy that I think everybody's got to watch out for this year's junior. These cars are coming back to his driving style. It was a terrific race. I loved the end of that thing.
Well, absolutely, and it was. I unfortunately got to. I had other things going on. I just didn't have the opportunity to catch up on that. But so obviously they're taking this weekend off, and you know now you know here's the thing: when we got these off weekends and we don't really have a race to break down, maybe we just do some recapping like we're doing today. It's a good time to do one of my favorite things, and we don't get to do it every day, but we're going to do it today. Rumors, NASCAR rumors and gossip. Let's talk a little bit about some of that good, juicy gossip going on in NASCAR. And I'm just going to throw out a couple of rumors to you, Kenny, here for just a few moments, and we'll get into some NHRA and local track action as well.
I'm ready, brother. Bring them on.
You're ready. You like the gossip.
No.
I'm not one to gossip, but I hear tell. Joe Gibbs, right? Go ahead.
I don't like the gossip, but I'll call BS when I think it's BS, so let's go from there.
Right. Well, that's what we'll do here on Rumor Has It. Joe Gibbs Racing announces Brian Vickers will drive the number 11 FedEx Camry in NASCAR Sprint Car Series beginning in Texas. Joe Gibbs Racing announces today, I believe, at least I got the press release today, that Brian Vickers will take over behind the number 11 FedEx Toyota Camry in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, obviously taking the place of injured Denny Hamlin, starting April 13th at Texas Motor Speedway. I believe it was previously released that Mark Martin would handle the duties behind the wheel for the number 11, but Joe Gibbs Racing Team has said Brian Vickers would be that. So, what are your thoughts on that rumor? Not rumor, BS.
No, that's not. Thursday night it was all rumor. Friday it was cleared up. Martin's going to be driving in Martinsville, and then Vickers is going to take the car over for the other five races or whatever it is it takes for Denny Hamlin to heal. I think that's a terrific move. Brian Vickers has done very well in whatever he's jumped into after his health issues got all cleared up and stuff, and he needs an audition and a big stage on a consistent basis. Although I think the only problem, the reason he doesn't have a seat is, you know, sponsorship. And there's no seats really open for anybody. So I think that's terrific. I don't know why the Vickers isn't racing at Martinsville. Maybe he's already committed with Michael Waltrip at Martinsville. But I think that's a good thing. And that's not a rumor at all. They finally got that thing straightened up. Thursday night it was very confusing. I think whoever was talking didn't have all the official capacities that they needed to have. They shouldn't have been talking quite yet. They should have went to the amazingly no comment thing. But, you know, it's kind of big news, so they wanted to get that released as soon as possible. Good move. Good move. Martin will do a good job at Martinsville, and it'll be fun to watch Vickers in that FedEx number 11 for the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Well, obviously, Denny Hamlin going back to his injury from last week. Again, we hope our hopes and thoughts and prayers. Obviously, it's very disturbing anytime you see that type of situation and that wreck happen, and you just cringe when you see them brought out of the vehicles the way they were and airlifted to hospitals. So our thoughts and prayers definitely go out to Denny Hamlin, one of the very talented NASCAR drivers out there, who, in my opinion, a lot of ways was really starting to come into his own this year, and it's unfortunate that's happened to him. He's going to be out for six weeks. All right, Kenny Wallace is preparing for a NASCAR Nationwide Series season debut. Kenny Wallace, liked by a lot, loved by some, hated by few, but if not all NASCAR fans, It may be just because of his track performances and his personality, but Wallace is nearly 50 years old as his NASCAR career winds down. Is he just looking for something to do, or what? Let's read into this rumor, BS. What are your thoughts on this rumor? Kenny Wallace is preparing for NASCAR Nationwide Series debut.
Well, Kenny Wallace makes no secret that he still would like to win a NASCAR championship. Nationwide or Cup or wherever he could land a consistent ride, and he's just not been able to find enough consistent money to run a full season. So he's going to grab any ride he can and show off his talents and abilities and see if the right guy happens to come along and the right handshake comes along. I mean, you never know who you're going to meet in the pit area or doing radio interviews or doing TV or whatever. Kenny Wallace is great. He's a good driver. He's got plenty to do, Tom. He's got enough dirt shows and short track shows and TV shows and things to do that he doesn't need to do Nationwide. They made a lot of money over the years. He said he's financially okay. The only thing he needs to do is slow down a half a step. But the way God wired that boy, I don't think he's ever going to slow down a half step till he's completely horizontal and cold. You know, so he's just going to go like crazy till the last day and he hits the finish line there. But he's made no bones about it that he would love to run a full schedule for anybody at any time. So anytime he gets an opportunity to jump in a Nationwide car, he's going to do it. And, you know, he does a pretty good job. I think if he got hooked up with the right team on a consistent basis and made all the shows, he would make some noise in the point standings and maybe even win a championship.
Well, and I believe that would be the case. I wish I had some time to get into some of the other rumors. Obviously, there's plenty of them out there, and we could talk a little bit about Joey Logano. We could talk a little bit about probably some Danica if we wanted to, definitely some Tony Stewart. But we don't have time. We want to get caught up on the NHRA. Obviously, coming up right here this next week, the 14th Annual Summit Racing out in Vegas. The strip at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, as if Las Vegas weren't loud enough. Now we've got NHRA there, obviously a great place. I know that NHRA drivers love to be out there in Vegas. Maybe not as much as they love being here in Indianapolis, but they love to be out there. So what are some of the things you're looking for out there in Vegas with NHRA? And really, we want to get caught up to speed on everything with NHRA.
Well, look out for great racing, and a lot of thinking again by the top engineers and mechanics out there, because of the humidity levels and the air and the track temperatures are all summer long. That's a challenge. In Vegas, this is going to probably be the hottest venue they have early in the year, so it's going to take, you know, the guys got to be on top of their game and stuff to really get down the track on a consistent basis and stuff. I'm really impressed by Tony Schumacher and how well he's doing this year. Although he's second in the points, which I didn't realize till I went and looked at it. And the guy who's first in the points absolutely destroyed a car a couple, 3 weeks ago and walked away from it, which is really cool, and Antoine Brown. The funny car group, you could throw a blanket over the top 10. Anybody can actually win 10, 11, 12, 13. At the top 12, 13 can win at any given time. Terrific, terrific racing there. The pro stock group, same thing. You could throw a blanket on the top 10 there. NHRA is just so cool because it's quick. It takes 5 or 6 seconds for a race. That kind of plays into the adult attention deficit disorder that we're all slowly falling into. And we can blame ESPN and we can blame news media tickers for that, because all of us are slowly getting trained to not pay attention more than 30 seconds at a time. You know, and I'm the same way. I mean, we're floating on Twitter feeds. We're reading each little Twitter thing. We're reading the tickers across the bottom of television. And that's part of what NASCAR's problem is. The races are so long, people get bored with them, shut them off, come back, go back and forth, take a NASCAR nap or whatever. Drag racing's got that 5, 6, 7, 8 second burst of speed. Race is over, and you're moving on to the next one. So I think NHRA's future is bright just because of that. They're going to continue to stay popular.
Obviously, Antoine Brown, Tony Schumacher, and Sean Langdon are obviously doing great in the top of the points there over there in NHRA, over there in Funny Car One. Caps, John Gray, and Courtney Force. Yes, she still remains the top of my list. It would be one of those name the top five, and then Courtney Force number 26 or whatever. Which, by the way, I do digress a little bit on this show, but I try to stay on point. Have you noticed when you get talking about you mentioned Twitter and stuff, made me think about that. Have you noticed that when you get these when you get these tweets or these texts from NASCAR, they say, okay, Kyle Busch, Bradley Kowalski, Dale Jr., whatever, and Danica Patrick, 36.
Her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
I mean, really, is this a league that is dominated by and infatuated with Danica Patrick? I mean, it just amazes me. But I think that see, I digress. I got off on that just because it's utter ridiculous.
Not really. You know, that's a legitimate question, Tom, actually. I'll undigress you a little bit. And unfortunately, it all goes right back to the dollar sign. She's bringing in a whole bunch of money. We did a little bit of a study at RadioSpeedTalk.com of who made the most money in racing in America, I think it was, here 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. And Danica was like 7th or 8th on the list, running a nationwide and a 10 race schedule on the cut side. And then this was, I think, right after the Daytona race where she had, these figures, Cliff is going to shoot me if I don't get these figures fairly accurate, but they were talking about how much activity was on the social media, and we're going to go to Twitter because I believe that's where most of the report it was on. When she, that week of window of time, that 8-day time where she was on the pole, and the race started, and they call them mentions, interactions, retweets, and quotes, I think, are the four things that they kind of measured, used that as a measuring stick on. She had 971 million mentions like that. Last year with Carl Edwards, in that same period of time, he had 15 million. That's insane. And the people who decide how much that's worth as far as an advertising value said that alone, all by itself, was worth like $2.9 million worth of advertising on Twitter. So she generates not just a little bit of interest, a gargantuan huge batch of interest. So, of course, they're gonna mention her every opportunity they can in a positive light. They're not going to mention that she's struggling. As soon as she gets away from these super speedways where you got to lift the pedal, I'm not going to mention that she destroyed a lot of cars last year. I'm not going to mention that she wasn't the darling of GoDaddy until a little bit of an uproar, and now they put her back in a Super Bowl. So they're not going to put the negative out there. They're just going to pump the positive. And I would do the exact same thing if I was NASCAR. Because unfortunately,
her ass is so hot, I've seen it cause traffic accidents.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you away from that, brother. And I thought,
well, I wish we could get more into to that conversation, but we're running out of time here. I want to make sure that we get to our local track, and unfortunately, because of our schedules here recently, we have not been able to feature our local track, and we want to do that every weekend. And this is one I'm sure that you're very familiar with because it's close to your home area, Gas City there, I-69 Speedway, obviously just now released their tentative schedule, April 19th and April 26th. April 19th is the non-wing sprints, UMP modified and Thunder Cars. April 26th, USAC National Non-Wing Sprints will be up there. And then on May 10th, KISS, King of Indiana Sprint Series Non-Wing Sprints and UPM Modifieds, and $700 to win out there. So talk with me a little bit. I know you're familiar with that track, Gas City I-69 Speedway. What's in it for the fan? And talk with me a little bit about that track.
Easy to find. Nice little racetrack. Right off of, they call it I-69 for a reason. You can almost see it driving on I-69. Coming from your direction, you get up to, I think, about the, well, now it's the 259-mile marker or the 59-mile marker. Hang a left. You go to Gas City, turn left if you're coming from Indy. Same thing from our neighborhood, Fort Wayne, get down to Gas City, hang a right, and it's only about a quarter mile to a half mile down the road on the right-hand side. Ample parking, nice facility as far as getting in and out. Traffic's not a problem. They put on a pretty good show there. Dirt racing is always dirt racing. The sprints on dirt, just about anywhere you go, unless you have track troubles, are a great, great show. the modifieds are starting to catch up with it as far as being able to put on a competitive race. The modifieds have been around 7 or 8 years now, and those guys are getting those things, the Todd Sherman cars, and a lot of the hot shoes in that division are really fun to watch. If I remember right, aren't you trying to buy the place? I heard it's for sale.
Well, I offered him a little bit of money. No, of course I'm not trying to buy a place. In all seriousness, that's what something that me, you, and Cliff should go in on, because you guys are such dirt track fans, and you guys are running this big campaign to get NASCAR back on dirt. And we still give you the credit for the NASCAR trucks heading to Eldora. So, hey, maybe we bring the boys to Gas City Dirt Track. Now, that would be something, because it would be a turn.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of like one of those New York City studio apartments where you got to actually turn around to close the door to get in the bathroom. It'd be
Mark, something like that.
Hey guys, check out Gas City I-69 Speedway out there in Gas City, and I know that the guys at Radio Speed Talk are big dirt track fans as well. So we always like to feature our track of the week, Gas City I-69 Speedway. Right there off of I-69. You can't miss it. Very easy to find. And their website is Gas City I-69, the number 69, speedway.com. All right, Mr. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk. You guys will be heard here on the Balanced Radio Network. Probably because of March Madness, you'll be heard on Monday here on the Balanced Radio Network. But what's going on at Radio Speed Talk this week?
We spent half the show talking about the NASCAR race and the finish and some of the things we'd like to change about NASCAR as far as the fines and the rules. And Tom Wolf, one of our co-hosts, I think he's getting a lawyer's degree because he wants to know everything about everything, and the France family is never going to release all that. So we get into a pretty interesting discussion about that. Did Logano do anything wrong? Did Stewart do anything wrong? Very interesting stuff. We talk about a little bit of short track stuff. I'm trying to remember everything because we did this just a night or two ago, and I slept since then. So it's going to be a good show, though. It's one of those shows that you come away from when you take the headphones off and put it on and go, that was fun. That was a good show. I think everybody's going to enjoy that one. So tune in to RadioSpeedTalk.com. It should be up on our website shortly. And then, of course, on the balance on Monday night, I guess, wherever you can find room to put that in. So it's a good show. Check it out. We enjoyed it this week.
Hey, it's always a good show to hear you guys. And what's good, I'll give you guys your plug. Obviously, we do this every week here. But what's good about Radio Speed Talk, it's just like a bunch of fat old men sitting around playing checkers and drinking root beer and talking about sport racing. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, brother. I was having me over in front of the bunch the other day. I didn't even realize it. Man, it kind of bummed me out.
No, I'm just kidding. Let me ask you this real quickly, and we got to let you go because we want to get going on the March Madness talk. Now, you've got your son, Preston, who's been on this show numerous times in the basketball section of college hoops, obviously out there at Kansas. I'm sure that, and I know for a fact, that in his bracket he had Kansas. Did you have Kansas in last night's game? What were your thoughts about that game?
My thoughts were I fell asleep, and I thought Kansas had it in the bag. I woke up this morning and saw they lost in overtime, so I immediately got on the phone, and they woke Preston up and asked him what happened. Yeah, I had Kansas in the Final Four.
Unbelievable. I have to admit, I fell asleep in the Florida Gulf Coast, Florida game, only to wake up. And, you know, that was a great story, but and we'll get into this here in just a few moments. But they are just – Florida was just too big and too much. It was a huge – it would have been a big giant killer David and Goliath type story, but it just – I would have been shocked if that would happen. But, hey, so would everybody else. And, you know – oh, and by the way, we were talking about Danica. I meant to say this a while ago.
Oh,
it's
yeah. Don't digress, brother. You did great.
Huh?
Don't digress. No, you did great.
I know. I was just kind of going through my notes to make sure I had everything here. And this week, this past week is Danica's birthday. So, you know, came across Facebook or something.
Yeah, that's important.
I got a full press release and whatever. Well, we're looking forward to Radio Speed Talk, keeping up with us, especially as we get closer to May, and it's going to be a lot of fun as we get into racing season here in Indiana, and we'll be teaming up and doing a lot of different stuff, and certainly out at the NHRA Nationals this year, if nothing else, we'll get together and do our show together. Well, guys, we got to take a break. Mr. Kenny Barr can be found at KennyBarr52.
Yep, on Twitter, and then my racing schedule is starting to fill up. I will be on the public address system down at Indianapolis Raceway, or Lucas Oil Raceway, excuse me, for the Top Speed Fabrication Modified Series April 14th. That's on a Sunday. Then you can also hear my Melodious Tones down at Anderson Speedway April 20th. So the schedule is starting to fill up, and I'll be traveling your direction soon.
Well, I tell you what we'll do is we'll definitely get out there, and we'll talk to you. We'll do a live interview with you. Maybe not live, but we'll do one of those. And maybe you can walk us through the public address system at Lucas Oil. So I love Lucas Oil. Scott Smith does a great job out there for everybody in the media. So if you get a chance to get out there to Lucas Oil Raceway, and especially when Mr. Kenny Barr is there over the public address system, saying, you know, where the bathrooms were. And
well, I'm also going to be working on a car in the CRA Sportsman Series, but unless we're doing real well, I'm not going to tell you which car it is.
Well, we want to get the driver on. All right, we got to go, Mr. Kenny Barr. I tell you what, well, you're more than welcome to hang around and talk some hoops with us, but we got to go. We got to take a break. We'll be right back at the top of the hour, guys. We're going to be breaking down March Madness. Myself, Evan Williams from Purdue University, $2 Bill Josh, and you know him from here on Indiana Talks, Mr. Gene Walker. We'll be right back.
County Road 233, under my feet, nothing on this wide road.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Peter, you just pooped all over the bed.
When you poop in your dreams, you poop for real.
All right, my minions, welcome back to hour number two of The Balancer. My name's Tom Marquis El Presidente. So glad that you guys could take some time to join us on a Saturday. Tell all your friends this is the place to be. You have stumbled across the number one sports talk show all over the internet, all over our affiliate radio stations. You can find us at one of our newest affiliates, is Indiana Talks. So glad that we are with them today. We're actually doing a simulcast live cast with them on Indiana Talks. So you can find us on Indiana Talks, iTunes Radio, or tune in as well live right now, guys. It has been March Madness. Absolutely March Madness. And it has been madness in March. And that's why they call it March Madness, guys. We're going to break down really kind of what's happened here in the Sweet 16. But we're also going to break down some anticipations and some predictions of what's going on in the games to come up today tomorrow. And we're going to look at your brackets and we're going to break it down. Well, joining us now from Purdue University, our own student representative in the Big Ten, Mr. Evan Williams. Sir, how are you doing? So glad to have you back here on The Balance, sir.
I'm doing good, Tom. Just at home for the weekend for Easter to spend some time with my family.
Hey, it's Easter break, and it's a good time to just get out home and get your juices fueled up and so forth. So now I know you're in the Balance Tournament Challenge here with us here, and I haven't kept track of everybody's brackets because mine just went to the pooper. So I really have not kept up with a lot of it. But how are you doing on your brackets, sir?
Well, I have two brackets in the challenge, Tom. One of them doing pretty good still. My championship of Louisville and Syracuse is still a possibility. So I've got that going. But as for the other bracket, all but one Final Four team is out, so not doing so good in that one.
Now, who do you have going into your national championship game there?
In the one I'm not doing well in, I had Ohio State and Miami.
Well, I had IU in across the board, but and they got through in various different scenarios. Now, I do still have Florida alive. Now, I had Kansas in my Final Four. I had Michigan State. They're out. We're going to get into all of that. So we're hoping that we'll be joined by $2 Bill Josh and Mr. Gene Walker as well. But we're going to certainly break down some of the games from last night. Louisville, Oregon, 77-69. Obviously, Louisville still remains the number one seed for a very good reason. And you know, Oregon had to come in and really be able to put that together. Talk with me about what you saw last night in the Louisville game, the Louisville-Oregon Mighty Ducks game. And is this Louisville team, I mean, we talked about this yesterday on the March Madness update, is Louisville the national championship in 2013?
I didn't really get to catch too much of the game. I saw highlights, and then I saw a little bit of the second half. But I'm really actually surprised with Louisville and how well they're playing. They've been good all year. But when it comes to tournament time in recent history, I've always picked Louisville to go far, and then they always get eliminated early. And, you know, I just didn't know if it would be the same story this year, you know, kind of a, you know, really talented team but not live up to the hype and, you know, make an early exit in the tournament. This team, though, is really showing me that they are a legit contender for the national championship. And as of now, with who's left in the tournament, I definitely think Louisville has the best shot of any team to win it all.
Well, we're going to break down those that Elite Eight as it comes together and as that picture is beginning to come more clearer. Let's look at the Duke-Michigan State game. Obviously, Michigan State a number three seed and Duke a number two seed. 71-61 game there. Michigan State, a lot of people thought would be in the Final Four and championship, and Duke. Again, you got Tom Izzo and Coach K, and no stranger. Both teams have big guys, both of them defensively minded. So really, it could have gone either way, but the Blue Devils did well in Indianapolis, as they always seem to do every time they come here in Indianapolis. So did you get a chance to see much of that Michigan State University Duke game?
Saw a lot of the second half in that game. And I had Michigan State in the Final Four. And I think that just shows how good that Coach K prepares his teams, because You know, I really thought that, you know, the offense of Michigan State would be too much and that they really wouldn't be able to match up, you know, well with Michigan, you know, how athletic Michigan State is. But, you know, Coach K, there's a reason why he's one of the greatest coaches of all time is because he gets his teams ready to play. And I think Duke is an absolutely great team, and I think of any of the teams still in it that they will best contend Louisville in this tournament. You know, I really think that they're a completely different team with Ryan Kelly back now. You know, I still think they might be undefeated with him, maybe one loss with Ryan Kelly in the lineup this year. So I'm a believer in Duke now, but, you know, they're going to have a very, very tough matchup with Louisville coming up.
Well, absolutely. And let's look again at the games from last night. Moving down to the West region, Wichita State continues to shock everyone. And this was on, on Thursday night. I do apologize for that. This was on Thursday night. Wichita State, and we talked a little bit about this on the March Madness update yesterday. Wichita State certainly continued to shock the NCAA brackets. Wichita State getting to the Sweet 16 and now moving on to the Elite Eight for the first time in a very long, long time. Wichita State coming over the number 9 seed over the number 13 seed, LaSalle. A lot of people thought LaSalle was that team to look at, but it appears that Wichita State just really dominated that game. Were you able to check that game out at all?
I saw a lot of it, Tom, and I really impressed with Wichita State. You know, the Missouri Valley Conference is competitive every year, and you know, to come out of that conference and do as well as they're doing in the tournament, you know, I think it says a lot about their program and, you know, how well, you know, these teams can contend, you know, even if they're not in a power conference like the Big Ten, Big East, ACC, you know, they can still make contenders. But, you know, obviously they're going to have the biggest test they've had, you know, I think since, you know, coming up with Ohio State. But I'm looking forward to that game because I think it is going to be a great game and they're going to keep it, you know, a close game with the Buckeyes.
Well, absolutely. And joining us now is Mr. $2 Bill Josh. Josh, how are we doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you this morning?
Fantastic. So glad that you guys could join us. And also, I want to make sure that everybody knows we're on Indiana Talks, and we're doing a simulcast with Indiana Talks. And through their affiliates as well, we're on iTunes Radio, TuneIn, and various other Live 360 and a lot of other different formats. So we're coast to coast right now. We're talking about March Madness. $2 Bill Josh joining us. Josh, I know you like many other people's brackets have gone all to heck, and we're talking about last night's game, and we were talking about a little bit some of the thoughts of last night's game. And let's bring Josh up to speed. We're talking about the Louisville Oregon game and obviously Michigan State Duke game. So let's talk about that Midwest region with you real quickly, Josh. Louisville, Oregon. Louisville has really begun to prove themselves that they could be the national champion of 2013. And you yourself said never pick Rick Pitino in a Sweet 16 type thing. Obviously, we're wrong on that. And you were and I wrote on your coattails, Josh. I was going on your record, man, and you let me down.
Well, last night wasn't my one shiny moment. I've had several of those during this tournament. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of the Louisville-Oregon game. Good job for Louisville. If you want to talk Michigan State-Duke game, I got to see the second half of that game. From what a little bit I could tell from you texting me and keeping me updated throughout the night the best you could, Oregon never really mounted a serious challenge to Louisville.
All right, Michigan State, Duke. You pick Michigan State. You and Gene Walker both pick Michigan State. I picked Duke. I said I think Duke just really has a strong core to make that happen. 61-71, Duke, Michigan State. Thoughts on that game?
Curry was just lights out last night. I think he hit something like 6, 7, 8 three-pointers last night. Ryan Kelly's as good as advertised. We forgot one simple fact, I think me and Gene did. Not sure if Gene's on the panel with us today or not. But when we were picking Michigan State last night, we forgot that Duke is undefeated with Ryan Kelly in the lineup until they got to the ACC tournament. First game they lost all year with Ryan Kelly in the lineup was in the ACC tournament. So, yes, if you look at Duke, they have like 5 or 6 losses, but they didn't have their best player in those games. And because college basketball is such a long season and Duke's not local here to Indianapolis, it was kind of easy to overlook the fact that when they lost those games, he wasn't in the lineup. So had I remembered he wasn't in the lineups, although I can't get credit for this now, I would have picked Duke.
You know what? Woulda, coulda, shouldas. Woulda, coulda, shouldas. That's why they call it March Madness. Because you know what? Here's what. When I hear you saying what you just said, Josh, I don't hear anything but this. Josh, I'll tell you what, my brother. Here's the thing. I picked you. You did not pick Duke. Let's move on. Talk to your therapist about it. All right, Arizona, Ohio State, we talked a little bit about Wichita State, LaSalle. But here's another good game. And I know this was on Thursday night, but I want to bring Evan in. Obviously, our Big Ten representative, student representative from out of Purdue University, Evan Williams. Evan, now you had Ohio State going into the final game and to win it all. So that didn't happen. Arizona beat let's start over again. Ohio State beats Arizona. Looks like you're still alive on that. I apologize. But Arizona, Ohio State, what are your thoughts on that game?
It was just as good as I thought it would be. Arizona's got a lot of young talent. And Ohio State, you know, is the team that we know in the Big Ten that, you know, really dominated the Big Ten tournament. I wasn't surprised it was a close game at all. I knew it would be close. But I did go with Ohio State, and they did come out on top, you know, because I have a lot of faith in that team right now. They're all playing their best, you know, with Quentin Ross, been outstanding for the Buckeyes as of late, you know, through the Big Ten tournament and the, you know, the NCAA tournament. And I think that's a really big factor, you know, add him in with Aaron Kraft and Deshaun Thomas, and they've got a great lineup.
All right, well, guys, let's move on to some of the other games from last night. We'll get into the games for the day. I don't know if Gene Walker's going to be able to get with us. I know he had a fight last night. Not in like he had a fight. He was in a fight. For those of you that don't know, Gene Walker also, in his real world, he manages mixed martial arts and cage fighting, and he had a fight out in Kokomo. So he wasn't in a fight. He didn't get his ass kicked or anything like that. Although he didn't get his ass. Huh?
I was going to say, for those who have seen Gene, I don't know, Evan, if you've had the opportunity to see Gene. Tom, I can't think of anybody who'd be dumb enough to get into an actual fight with Gene.
He's a big guy. All right. I think he's, what, 6'5", 6'6", or something like that?
6'5", 270, something like that, pure muscle.
When he came into our to the Super Bowl party, he actually had to duck his head to come in. So, all right. Guys, Kansas, Michigan last night. Wow, wow, wow. Now, there's a game. There's a March Madness game for you. Two teams wanted it really bad. Kept going and kept going and kept going. Michigan finally, in overtime, pulls it out 87-85. Ooh, yeah, stung. Jayhawks go down another number one seed in 2 days. The second one in 2 days, obviously, IU going down on Thursday night. Kansas, the latest victim of the Big Ten, though, still alive. Michigan, Ohio State, still alive in the Elite Eight. So, Evan, Kansas Jayhawks, Michigan Wolverines.
Tom, I had Kansas picked in this game. And I'm definitely regretting that after seeing, you know, how Michigan was able to come through late in the game. This team is for real. I had doubts, you know. You know, at times I thought during the Big Ten season they played a little soft for, you know, how good they are and how much talent they have. But, you know, last night's game against Kansas showed me this team could, you know, contend for the title, and I think they can play with anyone right now. You know, Trey Burke, one of the best players in the country, you know, really, really stepped it up last night, and I think this Michigan team is as good, you know, as the talent level that they have, you know, and they're playing their best ball at the right time, I think. So it's exciting to watch, and I'm looking forward to watching them throughout the rest of the tournament.
All right, $2 bill, Josh, what were your thoughts? Kansas, Michigan, two in a battle, overtime, Michigan triumphant.
Well, it came down to the same thing I think you're going to see later today. Of course, we'll get into today's game a little bit later. But Kansas, a lot like Ohio State, was living on borrowed time. They were living on time. They shouldn't have been left to the tournament. They were winning these really close games. maybe not so much in the first round or the second round in the NCAA tournament, but they were living on borrowed time, and you can only win so many close games before you can't come up with a miracle buzzer beater, you can't come up with a clutch three. And I'm going to say that's what happened last night. Yes, I know Kansas was the number one seed, but I'm going to say their glass slipper broke last night. It no longer fit. They could no longer duct tape it back together.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I think they were a number one seed for a reason. Look at IU. They just played flat. That's what we were talking about yesterday in the March Madness update. But Cinderella, no more. Your prom date, Josh, Mr. Florida Gulf Coast University, has a date with Florida for the very first time in the Sweet 16. They didn't put out on their first date, and Florida sends them packing home. I hate to say I told you so, but I really like saying that, so I'm going to say I told you so. Great story. It would have been a great – I think if they would have beat Florida, they would not be a Cinderella team anymore, be more like Rocky Balboa. But what I can tell you is Florida Gulf Coast, guys, great season. You know, we're all behind you. Fantastic story. That's what March Madness is all about. Certainly nothing to be ashamed of. Don't hold your head. I mean, hold your heads high, guys. That was a great season for you guys. But Florida really, really has all year long proven that they're a team that wants to be in the national championship, and obviously proven that last night against Florida Gulf Coast. And I won't say that it was easy for them, but you look at a 62-50 victory, and you know what's disappointing when you look at a 50-61 victory Syracuse over IU, and you put that those two in perspective. IU, if you want to make that comparison, if you want to stand back and look at it, IU played like a Florida Gulf Coast University on Thursday, which is why they lost. But Florida Gulf Coast University is Florida Gulf Coast University. So we'll start with you, Evan. Last night, obviously, the Cinderella story comes to an end. And the number 15 seed against the number 3 seed, Florida 62 over Florida Gulf Coast 50 University there. Evan, what are your thoughts on that game?
I figured the Cinderella story would have to end sometime soon for Florida Gulf Coast. They had a great run, absolutely tremendous season, you know, really shocked the world with that win over Georgetown in the first round, you know, made a great run, got a lot of people excited, you know, brought a lot of attention to their basketball program. But, you know, I figured Florida is just too strong of a team. They're way too talented, too well coached, Billy Donovan, to give up that game to Florida Gulf Coast. And it was a good game. I got to watch a lot of that. But, you know, Gators are just too powerful for Florida Gulf Coast in that one. I do have Florida in the Elite Eight in my bracket. So I wasn't surprised that they won. Just too powerful, but, you know, definitely nothing that for Florida Gulf Coast to hang their heads about that, performance and, you know, their season.
All right, Josh, what are your thoughts? Your Cinderella team, your prom date, I'll give you credit. You did pick them early, and so you did when nobody else in the world was. In fact, I was going back and listening to some of our March Madness updates and archives, and I realized that when we were talking about Florida Gulf Coast, I said, I don't even know who these guys are. So I don't even want to give it. And that was on Selection Sunday. I was like, I don't even know who this Florida Gulf Coast University is. And you then, Josh, you said, you know, hey, these guys will go somewhere. So you were right about that. But it ended last night in a 62-50 victory for Florida. Josh, what are your thoughts on that, dude?
It was a great story. Job well done. I have a feeling Coach Andy Enfield will not return to Florida Gulf Coast University next year.
Where's he going, Josh? UCLA?
No, actually, if I had to guess where Enfield winds up, I would say he's a more logical choice for Minnesota than he would be for UCLA because he doesn't have the pizzazz or the big name. He's not real flamboyant as you need to be at UCLA. But as far as last night's game goes, Patrick Young was a man playing against a bunch of boys last night, from what I saw. You know, Florida Gulf Coast, they're really fun to watch. The kind of NCAA version of the Los Angeles Clippers, and that they can do dunks most college teams can't dream of. But unfortunately, last night, and I think this is what happened ultimately, usually when there's a Cinderella team, the team they play in the Sweet 16 is more than 2 hours away from their campus. They're usually from another part of the country. So all week long, when Florida would turn on TV, they would hear about Florida Gulf Coast, how they're 2 hours away. They would see all the hype, all the hoopla. They would see all the talk and all the radio talk and all the newspaper articles talking about how great Florida Gulf Coast University was. There's probably very little coverage of the Gators this week. What you saw last night was a very angry Florida team that just wanted to take their frustration out. And a Florida Gulf Coast team that's just not big enough to do anything about it. The one thing I didn't like about the game, Evan, I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts, Tom, yours as well. I thought at the end of the game, Billy Donovan came off looking like a jerk.
Go ahead, Evan. We'll let you take that.
I didn't really catch the end of it. Catch the end of the game like that. You know, I was flipping back between the two games that were going on. So what happened?
Go ahead, Josh. Third. I didn't see it. Go ahead, Josh. I didn't see it either. Go ahead.
He basically took about a third of a second and barely touched the Florida Gulf Coast coach's hand, rather than actually give him a real handshake.
So he gave him the Tom Crean treatment. So
ruined the program.
I never understood the blow by handshake when you won. Yeah, you know, that doesn't really seem like a high class move by Donovan. In any case, I agree. You know, that's kind of a jerk move on that one.
Well, guys, I want to spend a few moments here talking about we joked around about some of these coaches and where they're going, and one of the standing jokes is Brad Stevens is going to leave Butler to go to UCLA, and we know that's not the case. But that said, there have been some key jobs that have opened up, Northwestern, UCLA, to name a few. So, Josh, we'll start with you if you're done doing your Pilates there. what are your thoughts on the coaching changes? Who goes where and who stays where?
All right, well, I've said this. I'm going to continue to say it. A lot of college coaches have said no, and they mean yes. The Indianapolis Star, ESPN's making a big deal because Brad Stevens says he likes walking around Hinkle in the morning. I like walking around Hinkle in the morning. The couple times I've been lucky enough to do it for the high school basketball regionals. Doesn't mean I'm going to be the head coach at Butler next year. And Butler fans, I'm convinced that if Brad Stevens was staying at Butler, he would have called a press conference. He would have called his good friend Dave Calabro, Anthony Calhoun. He would have called somebody and stated in these words, I am not leaving. He has not done that. And I believe based on that, he has one foot at Butler, and he has the other foot in UCLA.
All right, Evan, what are your thoughts? I don't think he's going to UCLA. So I think you see him right here at Butler.
I don't know with Brad Stevens, really. I think UCLA is a great opportunity. But at the same time, that program has a lot of, behind-the-scenes problems. Going on, the big Sports Illustrated article about him last year, about all the issues that Ben Howland had. So it wouldn't surprise me if Stevens did stay at Butler, but at the same time, passing up an opportunity like UCLA would be tough to do.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the coaches fired. Billy Taylor over at Ball State. Who goes in that spot, Josh?
I said originally, and I'm still going to continue to say, I believe that job will end up being Dan Dockich's job.
We've talked about that too, and we talked about that with Donahue here on Tony D here on our show on Selection Sunday. But he seems to think that Dan Dockich is pretty much a place. Hey, maybe Brad Stevens will go to Ball State.
Now you take a bigger job, not a smaller job.
Well, I tell you what, you look at some of these job openings that
that are out there. Obviously, Texas Pan American Ryan Marks is a good look for Ball State. They chose not to renew his contract. They didn't exactly fire him. You also look at some of the other coaches that were fired, and perhaps and see what happens there, obviously. But I think Ryan Marks with Texas Pan American, I just think that they like him, and there's been talk about him coming out there to visit. So we don't know about any official interviews on that. Evan Williams, who feels that Ball State job?
One of the names that I've seen thrown around for that job is actually Purdue associate head coach Jack Owens. Owens is a great, you know, he's a younger coach, and you know, he's a really big impact of Purdue's recruiting. So I think, you know, Ball State would be a great, you know, first head coaching job for a guy like Jack Owens. That would be a huge blow to Purdue if Owens were to leave. But that's all just speculation. I've seen his name thrown around in talks with, you know, the Ball State job.
Well, here's the thing. We're talking about Purdue, and we're talking to Evan Williams from Purdue University. I know you're there in the mix of things. And Josh, you've come out on a limb here several times on this show, although we don't see that happening here. But you said this is the last season for Matt Painter at Purdue. Evan, have you heard that? What are your thoughts?
No, Tom, I think Painter's job is safe for now. I think you know, everyone understands that this year was going to be a tough year. I don't think anyone who you know, knows basketball, knows the team, was expecting this team to be, you know, a top-tier Big Ten team or a tournament team. There's, you know, too much loss, too much inexperience. I think, you know, next year is really going to be a big, you know, turning point for this team, and they're only going to get better. So I think Painter's job is safe for now. He's, you know, he's still got a lot of time with this team. But I think in, you know, 3 years, if there's not some significant progress made, then I think it might be time to, you know, kind of question where the direction of the program is going.
Well, Evan, hold on just a quick second there, Josh. Let's talk real quick, Evan, about some of the allegations that have come to the surface via bloggers. Maybe we don't have a lot of facts, and I want to make this very clear. I'm not making any...
Appears we might have temporarily lost Tom and Evan. So while we wait for them to rejoin us, here's my point about the whole Matt Painter thing. There's been a lot of allegations against Matt Painter. There's been allegations that Painter slept with the cheerleader. There's been allegations that Painter fraternized with this student group or that student group. Matt Painter has not been able to consistently develop anybody into an NBA professional. Robbie Hummel should have been a surefire first-round pick. He was at Purdue for 4 years. Matt Painter could not develop him. Ja'Juwan Johnson got drafted. He wasn't ready to play in the NBA. Bottom line is Gene Katie had Purdue almost to the point where Indiana University is. Purdue was almost to the point where they didn't celebrate Big Ten championships. They were expected under Gene Katie. Then you have Matt Painter come in. And under Matt Painter, Purdue's happy to finish fifth or sixth in the Big Ten because they know that's the best they're going to do. So my point is, if you're Purdue University, why wouldn't you go out, make a run at Brad Stevens, make a run at Shaka Smart, make a run at, say, the coach from Davidson, make a run at a coach who's proven he could develop talent and he can win in March.
Hey, Josh, I'm actually back. Are you there, Josh?
All right, it looks like we got our stream back, and I do apologize for that. We're going to try to get Indiana talks back here, so we're going to try to get that. So $2 bill, Josh, are you with us?
I'm here.
All right, Josh, I'm going to let you go ahead and pick up where we left off, so that we can try to get our stream back with Indiana Live. Go ahead.
My whole point about Matt Painter is there's been allegations he slept with this cheerleader. He's fraternized with this student. He's unable to develop talent. There is no reason why Jajuan Johnson wasn't developed into a solid NBA player. He has all the talent. Matt Painter just doesn't have the talent to develop it. He can recruit. That's great. He can bring a whole bunch of 3- and 4-star recruits to Purdue. That's awesome. But Purdue is a special school in the Big Ten. Gene Katy spent 20-some years at Purdue, building Purdue into what Indiana University is. They didn't celebrate individual Big Ten titles at Purdue. They were expected. Purdue is expected at the start of every year to finish in the top three of the league, year in, year out. Under Matt Painter, they're happy to be fifth. At the Boilermakers finished fifth in the Big Ten under Matt Painter, they're happy. Good job, well done. Why wouldn't you go hire Brad Stevens? I mean, if he wants to stay in Indiana, as he claims, Purdue's in Indiana. Butler's about to go into the Big East, they're going to be the seventh best team. There's very little they can do about it. They don't have the athletic facilities. They don't have the money. They don't have the gym. They don't have prestige to compete with the other Big East teams that are going to be in the new Big East. Why wouldn't you go down and look at, say, Bob McKillop at Davidson, Shaka Smart over at Virginia Commonwealth, or is Morgan Burke so satisfied and so comfortable in his role, he's going to do to the Purdue basketball team what he did to the Purdue football team? He knew 3 years ago that he needed to change football coaches. He goes, no, give him one more year. No, next year will be the year.
Go ahead, Josh. Just continue talking. We're working on, guys. I do apologize. We've lost our stream with Indiana Talks. We're trying to get that back. So go ahead, Josh.
It got to the point where he was saying, no, give him one more year. Give Coach Hope one more year. No, next year will be the year. And then you go, no, next year will be the year. Is Morgan Burke so settled in his job at Purdue, he feels he can do no wrong? That he feels there's nothing he can do wrong? He doesn't care about the fans. What's he care about the fans? He's got a secure job. Is he that secure in his job? He already trashed Purdue's football program. Is he going to trash their basketball program as well? Because if he really cares about Purdue basketball, I don't see a reason. And hopefully, if Evan Stillwell, if he can counter this argument, why Matt Painter deserves more time. What has Painter done to say, yeah, I'm your guy, other than be a Purdue grad? If that's all it takes, why isn't Kenzo Martin the head coach of Purdue? He spent 15 years on Katie's staff. He never got the Purdue job. So I don't know if Evan's with us or not, but it'd be interesting to see if he can make a counterpoint to that argument.
Well, go ahead, Josh, and I do apologize that we were trying to get our stream back from Indiana Talk, since I've kind of missed what you were saying. So let's just kind of break down today's games. Let's just kind of get away from that. And I do apologize to all of our listeners. But Josh, summarize your point. Let's get into today's games. We're trying to get our feedback.
All right. Well, basically my point is Matt Painter hasn't really done anything outstanding, hasn't really done anything to say I deserve another chance. Now, moving on to today's games, at 4:30, will be Syracuse and Marquette. And at 7:30 tonight will be Wichita State and Ohio State. So let's go ahead and start with the Syracuse-Marquette game. For all of those, and myself was one of them at one point in time, who thought the Big East was overrated, who thought they were a one-team league, three out of eight teams are from the Big East. And there is two from the Big Ten. And Michigan and Ohio State. So going by that alone, I would say the Big East has proven they're a better team, a better conference, rather. But today's regional final isn't about, is the Big East a better conference than the Big Ten? Because they're not playing each other. Today's going to come down to a good old-fashioned, I hate you, you hate me. Neither one of us want to be playing the other. Which one of us come up with enough plays to win? You know, Syracuse has this 2-3 zone. The vaunted Jim Boeheim Syracuse 2-3 zone. They lulled Indiana to sleep with it. They put a lot of
Go ahead, Josh. I just wanted to point out, guys, we're back on Indiana Live now. We do have our stream back. I apologize about the technical difficulties. Wouldn't it always happen on the very first day we have some sort of technical difficulties? We lost your stream, but as I understand it, we're back up on all of our affiliates now. So go ahead, Josh. Real quickly, we need to get into today's games. So I know we have two games left to play today, obviously Syracuse and Marquette, and Wichita and Ohio State. So let's talk about Syracuse. Syracuse obviously brought down the number one seed Indiana. We know what they could do with the zone. We talked about it in great detail. Marquette, obviously a number three seed from the same division as Syracuse, the Big East. They're used to playing each other. They know each other. This can be a very, very good game. Break down this game happening at 4:30 on CBS.
I think it'll be a fabulous game because Marquette's not scared of the zone. They've seen it a lot. Syracuse knows what Marquette does. Marquette knows what Syracuse does. This is a typical, well, not a typical NCAA tournament game. This is just another Big East game. This is Syracuse and Marquette's last chance to ever face each other as members of the Big East. The winner of this game will win the last complete Big East game, unless somehow Marquette and Louisville or Syracuse and Louisville beat in the national title game. So I think these are two teams that are very comfortable playing against each other. There's nothing the other team could do that the other team won't be anticipating. I think you're going to see Marquette win this game by a score of about 79-77, just because they're a little bit bigger inside. And unlike IU, they know how to play the Syracuse zone.
Well, it absolutely, and I think Marquette has proven that they could absolutely handle a team like Syracuse. So I wouldn't be surprised if Syracuse goes down. I tell you what, I definitely would not even be surprised if we see Syracuse, Josh, in the championship game, possibly against a team like Louisville or something, a team like that. So let's look at some of the key factors to that game. What does Marquette have to do to beat a team like Syracuse?
They have to be hot from three-point line. They have to take care of the basketball. They have to out-hustle Syracuse for 40 minutes, and they have to avoid foul trouble. Yes, I know those are all cliches, but cliches are cliches for a reason.
I thought you. I'm sorry, Josh. I thought you were going to get into something else there. Well, let's talk about the other game going on today. Josh, give us a preview of that game, and what are some of the things that we're looking for in that game?
Well, at 7:00, it's Ohio State, Wichita State. Ohio State features Deshaun Thomas from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thad Mott is also formerly at Butler University. So there's some Indiana ties on the Ohio State team. So myself, being a Hoosier fan, wanting somebody to root for now that IU and my Cinderella team are gone, I'm now going to jump over to the Ohio State bandwagon. Just because it's a couple Indiana ties. Aaron Kraft isn't maybe the best guard in the country. He's certainly my favorite guard to watch in the country. Wichita State has a distinct height advantage in this game. And Tom, you got to say, even though they're a 9 seed, they're not a Cinderella because of the teams they've beaten to get here. So I think the key to the game is Ohio State's won two really close games so far this tournament. Iowa State and then Arizona the other day. Tom, do you think if it's a close game in the end, Ohio State has one more miracle, or do you think that basket's just about empty?
It's done. The Shockers are going to – I've been riding this Wichita State bandwagon, and even though, yeah, maybe in all reality my bracket hasn't come together, but for my bragging sakes and my purposes, I tell you what, though, this is a game that Ohio State has got to prepare for very, very thoroughly. Wichita State is the real deal. They're going to make it to the Final Four. I really do believe that they can shut down the Buckeyes. And you look at it, I don't know, let's talk a little bit about Kraft, Aaron Kraft. How crafty is he? He's recorded 18 assists, 9 steals, and 7 turnovers. 7 in 3 NCAA tournament games. The junior has really caused chaos in the rhythm of Iona, Iowa State, Arizona. So, as far as Kraft goes, let's talk about him for a moment, and then we'll move on over to the other parts of the game there. But Kraft is the key a link there. Josh, would you believe? Josh? Okay, Josh, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm not sure what's going on.
I think that was your $2 phone. I think that was your Obama phone. Go ahead, buddy. Did you hear what I was saying?
I heard Kraft is the key, and that's about all I heard.
Well, that summarizes what I was saying. But let's talk about Aaron Kraft a little bit. How important is he in this particular game?
Well, I think he's very important. He may not score the most, and he may not be a prolific scorer. He may not be the star of the team. He's kind of like the Energizer Bunny. He'll play hard for you when he's in there. And he's a great defensive player. He has the ability to be clutch from the line. He's just a little bit does a little bit of all of it. Kind of like Paul George, maybe not necessarily dominant on any one facet of the game, but an all-around solid player. If Kraft has a bad day, the Buckeyes lose. Kraft has a good day. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make my pick right now. Kraft has a good day, they lose. If he has a bad day, the Buckeyes lose.
Way to pick. Way to go both ways so you know that you're not going to lose. Well, here's some of the things to watch. I like Wichita State. I like the Shockers. You know, when Wichita State outplayed LaSalle on Thursday, Shockers standout Carl Hall was the point there. He ran the floor, pushed the pace, while his team will certainly need his offensive production. Defensively speaking, the key player in this game for the Wichita State Shockers is Carl Hall, and I think that's just as much of an important role for him as him being productive. And think about this, Josh. He'll be responsible for guarding DeSean Thomas. He knows that's not an easy assignment. Heck, that's not an easy assignment for anybody. He can shoot it. He can drive it. He'll have his hands full with DeSean Thomas. But I think Carl Hall and Wichita State, the Shockers, are up for Kraft and Thomas and the Buckeyes, Josh.
I'm going to agree. I think Wichita State's going to win this game. I think Ohio State's living on borrowed time. They have been for 2 rounds now. But I'm curious to see. There's been a lot of talk about the officiating in the last 2 Buckeye games. Are we going to see the officials be really conservative with their calls today? Or are they going to go out and do the opposite? Are they going to try to make every little call and slow this game down to almost an unwatchable pace? So, like, every 15 seconds, somebody going to the line and shooting free throws. If they do that, Ohio State can win. But we don't have time to get into this. Ohio State, you're living on borrowed time. I don't think the referees are going to bail you out a 3rd straight game.
Well, I certainly wish I had that sound bite, living on borrowed time. I'm going to have to sing that for you, and that's all I got. But here's the thing, guys, and what I want to do, and we look at this, I think you're right. You look at Missouri Valley Conference and you look at the Big Ten, 2 completely different conferences, especially in the way that they play basketball. And in a lot of ways, the Big Ten is a lot more superior. But in my opinion, the Missouri Valley Conference and the Shockers really have the ability to shock Ohio State and a lot of people's brackets, because a lot of people have Ohio State going. And, you know, during Ohio State's, and, you know, kind of the stat to look at here, during Ohio State's 11-game winning streak, DeSean Thomas has taken 17 shots or more three times. He has took 17 shots or more in five of the six games that preceded that run. The Buckeyes were 3-3 in those contests. Thoughts on that?
Well, apparently, the more DeSean Thomas shoots, the more vulnerable the Buckeyes are. But on the other hand, if he's not scoring, who on the Ohio State Buckeyes is going to score? LaQuentin Ross is a great player. I don't think he can lead you in scoring, at least not lead you in scoring and you win. Kraft can't lead you in scoring and a win. So maybe right that right there is Ohio State's downfall today. And that the more DeSean Thomas shoots, people start standing around, and then it becomes harder to move the basketball. But on the other hand, if he's not shooting, they can't score.
Well, and that's true. You know, we don't have a lot of time left here because of our stream. And I do want to point this out, guys. Our stream on Indiana Talks will end at 10:58 a.m. Eastern. And we'll be back up with them. And this is a good opportunity also, guys. We're going to be debuting a brand new show here on the Balance Radio Network, myself and $2 Bill Josh. And we're going to be talking some, and possibly Gene Walker, but definitely myself and $2 Bill Josh here. We're going to be breaking down a weekly MLB update for you called The View from Home Plate. And that'll be on Indiana Talks as well on this Thursday evening. And then it will go live on Friday evenings, I think is the schedule that we've got with Indiana Talks. And it'll also be here on the Balance Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. Real quickly, Josh, you were talking about the refs and the calls that were made, and they're going to be overcautious. It goes back to my point that we were making during the March Madness update. We put these refs up on pedestals. We don't allow them to make any mistakes, and when they do, it's catastrophic. Why do we put them on such a pedestal when, in all reality, you still got to look at it? I mentioned we were talking about Kraft. Kraft still had to make that shot. Players make mistakes. Coaches make mistakes. But the moment that a ref makes a mistake, we're ready to have his job and just, you know, it's not anything like the replacement ref fiasco that we saw in the NFL. So I don't know that that's exactly fair. I don't have time to get into that rant. I do want to talk a little bit about some of the other things in the other game that's going on to watch over there in the Syracuse Marquette game, and a lot of that got broke up. And I apologize. We were trying to get a lot of stuff going there at the same time today with our stream with Indiana Talks. So we do apologize if you missed our conversation about the coaches. Now, you can catch all of it on the archives, on iTunes, as well on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. So some of the things to watch around the NCAA tournament in that other game is Michael Carter-Williams. The Syracuse League guard became one of the toughest matchups in the NCAA tournament. He shredded the Indiana with 24 points and completely controlled the game. Carter-Williams scored 14 points and added five assists and four turnovers. How big of a threat is Michael Carter-Williams, Josh?
I think he's an absolute threat. I think he's the key to that whole game. If he gets hot, Marquette's in trouble. I think he's also a first-round NBA draft pick, quite possibly here in Indiana. But I think as far as this particular game goes, he's absolutely the key. If he gets on track, Marquette's in trouble.
All right, let's look at some of the other keys real quickly. What to watch for in that game. Second shot opportunities. The Orange were highly successful at creating more possessions for themselves than against Indiana. Marquette limited Miami to one shot on many occasions. Marquette's wings like Jamel Wilson, Trent Lockett, and Vanderblue can certainly board the bigs like Garter and Atal. But they'll need to keep the length of Syracuse going, and they got to keep them off the glass. So real quickly, what do we watch for in that second shot opportunities from Syracuse and Marquette?
I think you got to look for Marquette's guards to keep Syracuse off the board again. And on another note, I just want to see Marquette when you try to say Vanderblue again next Saturday.
I have a hard time saying Vanderblue. Makes me want to talk about the Colts. By the way, I wish we had time to get into that mystery wide receiver that's coming, but we don't have time. Stat to watch over there, guys, in that Syracuse-Marquette game. The three-point shot can be a great equalizer here, guys. Carter Williams, Brandon Tritch, and Sutherland can bury daggers on threes. The Golden Eagles, they're very eager. The Golden Eagles are not as prolific at three-point shooting teams. Marquette really doesn't rely on the three ball to get into to the Syracuse zone. They have to break that zone up. So that's kind of the stat to watch. And I think that the leader of the threes in this game, Josh, will be the winner of the game. Officially, what's your pick, Syracuse or Marquette?
Marquette, 81-76.
All right. And what about the next game going on there? Oh, Ohio State and Wichita. What are your thoughts on that game? Who's going
to
win that game?
Well, it kills me to make this pick because if I'm right, then I have no teams playing in the Final Four. But Wichita State 79, the Buckeyes 69.
Well, I tell you what, I'm gonna pick Marquette, and I'm gonna stay on my Wichita State deal. And keep them going on too. Guys, I wish that we had time to get through it all. Unfortunately, our technical difficulties pushed us off. We're getting ready to lose the stream there on Indiana Talks, and we're so glad that we could be a part of their network. You could also catch us on iTunes as well. The rest of us guys here at Balance Radio Network, we're going to stay put here for just a couple more minutes, get our rants in. It's a $2 bill. Josh, jump in the jungle, sir.
My whole rant is, and today's the lead eight games, and tomorrow, it's not all the flagrant fouls that we've been calling this entire tournament. It takes away the emphasis on playing defense, and you just kind of got to stand close enough to the guy with the ball to get hit, and then your team gets two shots in the basketball. That's not how defense was meant to be played in basketball. It's cheapening the games. That, and who really wants to have to watch 10 minutes of commercials so they can go to the TV monitor and determine, was that a flagrant one or a flagrant two? How about it was just an offensive foul and leave it at that? That being said, I look for two great games today. I tune in next Thursday for a view from home plate, and it's Indianapolis Indians home opener for the 2013 season.
And that's right. We'll get into that in the view from home plate. And, guys, I tell you what, we're really looking forward to this brand-new show, and that's this Thursday that it airs here on Indiana Talks, as well as Blog Talk Radio and the Balance Radio Network across all of our great networks. Well, guys, I'm going to tell you what, my rant is very, very simple, and I've talked a little bit about this, but I want to kind of expand on this a little bit. We actually put the refs on a pedestal that they shouldn't be, guys. There's a lot of pressure to be out there in the NCAA March Madness games and to make it happen. Let's give them a break. Let's let them know that they're doing the best they can. If they're positioned well and they've got the best look they can, I would challenge any of you guys, any of the minions, to go out there and stand on the floor and get the calls right all the time. Refs are human. They're going to make mistakes, guys. The ref did not cause that loss with the Ohio State game at all whatsoever, guys. They move on, and it's just one of those things. And it's March Madness, guys. Keep your brackets coming. Unfortunately, most of them are busted, especially if you had IU. Those of you that have Louisville still alive, those of you that have Florida still alive, and you know, I don't think anybody had the Shockers going all the way to the final game. But what a great season they had. And again, great season of Florida Gulf Coast University, guys. That's going to do it for me. We're out of here. We'll see you next Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern. And again, this Thursday evening, we're going to be doing our very first show, View from Home Plate, where we're going to be breaking down all the MLB action of the week and what's going on next week. Guys, don't drink and drive. It's not cool. Now fist bump me and go back to work.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.